Jonathan Bond is the co-chairman and co-founder of Kirschenbaum Bond & Partners, an advertising agency in New York City. He and his partner, Richard Kirschenbaum, have written a book about the innovative techniques they use to get past our ad detectors. It's called Under the Radar, Talking to Today's Cynical Consumer. From the Museum of Television and Radio in New York City, Jonathan Bond tells Ann Strainchamps what he means by under-the-radar advertising.
You have to start with the premise, which is that consumers are very, very cynical and disbelieve advertising, and that if you just take a very overt approach and say, hey, this product's really good, buy it, it's not going to work.
Can you give me an example?
People already know when they see an ad that you're trying to sell them. So they're not really open. It's not as if they're just meeting a person and their person is saying, hey, this is a really great car or something, you ought to buy it, because they know you have a vested interest. So you already start out behind the eight ball. So you have to overcome that, and you have to do something that kind of slips through their defenses, which they've built up, because the average person is exposed to 1,500 commercial messages per day. And if they let all of those messages slip through their radar and paid attention to them, then they'd basically that's what they'd be doing all day.
So what does it take to slip through the radar?
Well, there's dozens of ways to get around that, and each situation is completely different. I mean, there's some general rules, and then there's some specifics that come up situation by situation. But I find that a great way to look at advertising, if you're a novice, is just to imagine, to take what you know about people and imagine brands as people and how they talk to you. You wouldn't like somebody that was a braggart if they walked into a bar and said, hey, aren't I fantastic? You want to end up thinking they're fantastic, but you don't want to do it by having them overtly come out and say it. So therefore, a brand that comes out and says, hey, I'm great, I'm number one, we sold the most cars of anyone, we're the best, you have the same reaction as you'd have to a person. Oh, yeah, sure. You know, it's not very likable. So the idea is to demonstrate things, not say them overtly.
What was the first under-the-radar ad campaign that you came up with?
Okay, the first thing that we ever did was that Richard and I were working at other agencies, and we were doing some freelance work, and we met Kenneth Cole when he had about $2 million in sales. And he's, you know, very trendy, fashion-forward designer. And
this is Kenneth Cole, the shoe designer.
Yeah. Now he makes all kinds of things. Now he's got a $500 million business, and he's still running the same campaign that we created in 1986. But this was, at this point, he had almost no business, and he had very little money. And we realized that to make him, you know, very cool was easy, but that the problem with guys like him is they go out of style, they become faddish. And we thought, how can we put a campaign in place that will make sure that he's always in style? And so we came up with the idea of current events, because they're always current. So we waited for an event to happen. Then we basically wrote, you know, a point of view from a quote from him, and that was the ad. It was Kenneth's view on a current event. So we could have done an ad this week on the election, obviously, on the election votes or something. But the first ad we did was Imelda Marcos bought 2,700 pairs of shoes. She could have at least had the courtesy to buy a pair of ours, signed Kenneth Cole, which, again, is self-deprecating. And it got picked up in the news, and everyone was talking about it, and we did a series of ads, you know, on all different kinds of current events. And he runs that campaign to this day.
And so was it successful? I mean, did he actually sell more shoes?
Yeah, but a lot of times advertising can sell. Some of the most effective advertising sells, but in a delayed fashion. So believe it or not, selling, you know, more product the day the ad runs isn't always the objective, which I know sounds complicated. But in other words, if you want to sell shoes on that day, you do a catalog, a page with a lot of shoes, and you say, here they are, here's the prices. You see one you like, you buy it. That's kind of situational. But if you really want to have a brand long term, then they have to buy into the idea of the brand. Then you have to sell a point of view, a philosophy. And then long term, you're able to sell a lot more things because you've given the people something to buy into, something to believe in, almost like a religion.
So tell me about some of the other under the radar ad campaigns you've created. What have been some of your favorites?
Oh, Snapple, I think. The Snapple lady. And we did a whole lot of tactics that were revolutionary at that time. First of all, using Wendy the Snapple lady, who is, you know, from Long Island, 5 feet tall and over 200 pounds, as a spokesperson for a natural new age beverage was kind of controversial. No one had ever done that before. And no one wanted to do it. And then I remember we showed a picture of, I think it was Oprah and Roseanne and maybe Rosie O'Donnell, somebody like that. And we said, here are the most popular women in America today. And they were all overweight. And this is the truth. This is, you know, what the country is. And so having somebody like that really demonstrates that we're honest, we're who we are, we're natural, we're not putting hype on it. And the whole idea was 100% natural marketing. It was marketing that doesn't feel like it was created by an ad agency. It feels like a couple of guys brewing up Snapple in their attic and making their own ads. So you have to work very hard to make it look like you're making your own ads and yet still have them be good.
Was that the one where you even went ahead and aired ads that you'd sort of tried to do and had kind of failed and you went ahead and aired those anyway?
Yeah, I mean, I think we took it to more of an extreme than you really had to. You know, it was like if a tree falls and nobody hears it, did it really fall? You know, we really did everything exactly the way the shoot happened. We had no scripts when we did TV shoots, and we ran whatever happened. And, you know, we could have had this argument, it doesn't matter if it happened or not, as long as it looks like it's real. But we went all the way to actually, we would someone would write a letter. Like a guy from – a colonel from Kentucky wrote a letter saying he hated New York, but he liked Snapple. So we didn't have a script. Again, there was never a script. We always just had a situation we put together, and we'd run the camera, and we'd run whatever happened, 100% natural marketing. We sent Ed Koch out to convince him that New York was a great place. And the colonel was named Ed, and, you know, they were drinking Snapple and saying, to the Eds, and it was just great. And we ran this whole spot. And at the end, he says, I still don't like New York, but I like Snapple and I like you, Ed. And it was great. It's a fantastic spot. And it was all true.
What about there was something else with Snapple, Shane the Wonder Dog?
Yeah, a woman wrote a letter saying that she had a dog who loved Snapple. And all he had to do was hear the bottle being opened. It made a snap sound. And the dog would come running. So we went out there with the camera. It cost like $200,000 to do this. And we sat all day, and she opened like 4,000 bottles of Snapple, and the dog just sat there, never moved.
And, and anybody else
ran this
said,
commercial.
Forget it. But
we read the letter. She said, this is Shane the Wonder Dog, we called him. And we put the camera on the dog, and she's doing everything to get him to come. And he sat there the entire time, and that was the commercial. Which actually, it made the point that Snapple is 100% natural. We're not really, quote, so good at marketing and advertising. We don't really know how to do a good commercial or a slick commercial. And so we'll run whatever happened, even if it's, quote, a failure. Coke never would have done that, or Pepsi never would have done that.
One of my favorites of the ads you did, I really love the bamboo lingerie one, because that would have completely gotten me.
Right, yeah. We did stencils for a lingerie company on the street. And it said, from here, it looks like you could use some new underwear, bamboo lingerie. And those were great because from a media standpoint, another thing that makes something an under-the-radar idea is using media. Because everyone knows when they turn on the TV or when they open a magazine, they have their radar up because they know they're about to encounter many commercial messages. So they're prepared. And the surprise attack works because if you're walking down the street, you don't have your, you know, ad editor up. So when you look down the street and you see this, you know, these words looking at you, you read them. And then you smile and you go, that's interesting. Maybe that's an interesting brand and I should go check it out.
Maybe I do need some new underwear.
Maybe I do need some new underwear. Yes, exactly.
So what other surprise, unusual places have you put ads?
Well, Snapple, we did advertising on mangoes to introduce Mango Madness. It said now available in Snapple. So we actually stickered 22 million pieces of fruit in South America.
Now, by now, you're not the only ones who use the under-the-radar technique. I figure you've probably got a few favorites of that other people have come up with.
Yeah, there was a commercial, basically. I think the assignment the agency was given was there was a special low, low weekend fare, what a surprise, to the U.S. that weekend. And they had to basically do an ad, your typical sales ad. And they came up with an ingenious way of doing it, which was they hired actresses, I think it was, to go to all the movie theaters because you can run a lot of commercials before movies in the UK. And a couple gets on TV and they're having a wonderful time together and they're in Central Park or something. And all of a sudden, the couple's kissing and the man looks at the corner of his eye at the audience. And a woman stands up and says, "Nigel, is that you? What are you doing there?" And a huge dialogue ensues, which is, of course, perfectly timed. And, you know, the woman in the audience is having a dialogue right on cue with the guy in the commercial. And it seems that, you know, she's his girlfriend and he's seeing her with this other woman. And you know, the reason that he's with her is because he got this low fare to the States and that's where he stashed this other woman. It's very funny. And then in the end, she walks out in a huff and dumps him and the whole audience stands up and claps. It's fantastic.
Do you have any others that are particular favorites that either that you've done or that others that you really wish you had done?
Yeah, I have one other that I wish I'd done, which was I think the BMW Z3 when it was introduced. And they basically introduced the car by putting it in the James Bond movie and replacing the Aston Martin. And they paid money to replace the Aston Martin with the BMW Z3. I thought that was just cool.
That's an example of product placement, which has been going on for a long time in movies. I think Reese's Pieces was in E.T., for example. You created another example, product placement in a play, which is a little hard to believe.
The play is actually not the better example of that, but I'll tell you the one that was really cool. We helped create this drink called the Hennessy Martini, which is a cocktail using one of our clients, Hennessy Cognac. And to help stimulate demand and teach bartenders how to make it at exactly the same time, we actually had live commercials, but people didn't know there were commercials. In bars, we had really good-looking types of people out of work, actors and that sort of thing, go into the hot bars in the right cities, and they would carry on and have conversations and maybe get into a fight and that sort of thing and make up, and they'd end up buying everyone a round of these Hennessy martinis. So the bartenders would learn how to make it. The people there would see a really good-looking, charming couple drinking it, think it must be cool, and no one knew that they were actually really ads.
That's so under the radar. That's so under the radar. It seems unethical somehow. You wouldn't even know it was an ad.
Yeah, no, it's on the borderline. It is on the borderline. But I don't think there's any harm. Hey, you're getting people free drinks. It's all in good fun. Okay. And then one of the people eventually told a journalist, and it was reported, and on CNN and in I think Esquire did a whole story on it. Forbes did a story on it, and then we stopped doing it because it was not under the radar anymore. Huh. People knew. It doesn't work. Once you know they're paid, it doesn't work. So we had to abandon that after 4 or 5 years.
Jonathan Bond is the co-author of Under the Radar, talking to today's cynical consumer. He spoke to Anne Strainchamps from the Museum of Television and Radio in New York City.